You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we always throw paper towel rolls like giveaways at a sports game. If you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternately, you could like us on Facebook, just like my girlfriend did last night. Thanks, took long enough. So like us on Facebook to show that it's real. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
You know, when I was first getting together with Fiza, and I asked her, so can I add you on Facebook? She said, no, I don't have an account because I have a life.
Yeah, which we have to get her to hold an intervention with Christine about that. So
she now does have an account, but back in the
How
time,
often does she watch Instagram stories?
What is that?
Exactly. Exactly.
Social media director of the society.
Yes, I do feel like the oldest get off my lawn digital director in all of DC. We should be using CDs. CDs are the future.
Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
Fiza, I'm glad Fiza learned that there is no Facebook life dichotomy. They are one.
Oh, God.
And soon, or at least will soon to be one. The internet is the real existence.
I think that is one false dichotomy, bro, that I would be okay with.
We'll keep that dichotomy. That false, yeah.
Please dichotomy, bro. But... You know, speaking of things that I'm not okay with, let's head forward into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
This week, the U.S. experienced the deadliest mass shooting in modern American history. I don't have the latest numbers, but according to this article, at least 58 people are dead and over 500 are wounded.
Can I stop you right there, actually?
Yes.
Can I just say I'm really glad that we have started using the word modern? I just want to just say that very briefly. Thank you, everyone out there, for using the word modern when we're talking about these statistics.
Yes, because there are plenty of not modern examples of many more people dying.
But, yes. Just don't want a blind eye to history. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, indeed. As tens of thousands of people enjoyed a music festival in the streets of Las Vegas, 64-year-old douchebag from Mesquite, Nevada, was perched 32 floors above them in his Mandalay Bay hotel room. He had 19 rifles and hundreds of rounds of ammo, supplies that are, this is according to the article, plentiful in a nation that has more guns than people. A few minutes after 10 o'clock, douchebag opened fire on an unsuspecting crowd and killed many people. But... of course, that wouldn't be enough witness to farce. That would be enough witness to farce. Wow. That would be enough farce to witness on its own. But the social justice narrative had to sneak its way in there. And thus, this article from TheIntercept.com, quote,
what is
the white privilege of the lone wolf shooter.
Daniel, before you go into that, what is the witness to farce ratio? Do we need to invent that?
Well, it needs...
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, witness to farce, like you're misspelling the word.
No.
Oh, man. Both of you went in the completely opposite nerdy directions that you would. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Now go in the direction that they would go. Go in the direction the social justice people would go.
Well,
right
the
now.
Witness to farce ratio right. on a weekly basis should be 1-to-1, or at least as close as we can make it 1-to-1.
One witness per
They make
farce.
It hard on us, though. They make
do.
It really hard on us.
So much farce. Not enough eyes to witness. So, here we go. Douchebag, like the majority of mass shooters in this country, was a white American. And that simple fact changes absolutely everything about the way this horrible moment gets discussed in the media and the national discourse. Whiteness, somehow, protects men from being labeled terrorists. Unless, of course, you're Timothy McVeigh. Oh, wait. That's not in the article. Okay, the privilege here is that the ultimate conclusion about shootings committed by people from commonly non-white groups often leads to determinations about the coercive or destructive nature of the group itself. When an individual claiming to be Muslim commits a horrible act, many on the right will tell us Islam is the problem. For centuries, when an act of violence has been committed by an African American, racist tropes follow, and eventually the criminalization and dehumanization of an entire ethnic group. So, that's where I'm going to stop and say that Justin... should we now just demonize all white people because this white douchebag shot and killed 58 people in Las Vegas?
Wait, we don't already demonize all white people?
Like, thank you.
Yes. Your question really elicited the answer you wanted out of me. So, I mean, I have a couple of things to say about this whole argument, and I think this is an important thing to talk about. And James, maybe you can answer this. I think this might be better for you to answer than for me. But the first thing I want to do is I want to ask Daniel a question. Mm-hmm. Daniel, wasn't the DC sniper years ago black?
Yes.
Did we go around saying like that was an example of black people being terrorists and evil when he did that?
No, of course not. And that's one of the things that's just completely disingenuous about this paragraph. One is he gives two examples of us demonizing quote-unquote groups based on their crimes. But the second example, he says, for centuries, again, meaning not in modern American history, when an act of violence has been committed by an African-American, racist tropes follow. I think that's a complete non sequitur. We don't demonize all African-Americans when crimes are done. We don't demonize all Muslims when acts are committed. It's, by the way, what we're talking about is people who commit violence in the name of radical, or not even radical, just in the name of Islam. That's what we're talking about.
Right, and that is the thing I want to toss to James here, because there's an irony of this article, and the irony is he's complaining about collectivism while using collectivism himself, right? He's saying, you guys see everyone else collectivistically, so we're going to see white people collectivistically. So this is the question I want to ask James, and Daniel, you can chime in too, but... Well, I just think you might have more knowledge about this than I would.
Oh.
But what is the difference between the collectivism we rail against and railing against... Islam leading to terrorism? What is the difference between those two things? Because I think that's a very important point to make, because I think he's intentionally obscuring those to make them seem the same.
Right. Yeah, good question. I mean, so yeah, there's racial collectivism, and then there's just judging people based on their ideas and thinking that actions have relevancy for judging certain ideas. So, you know, if we're to look at this guy and say that this guy's actions are somehow reflective of white people, that would be racial collectivism, because clearly, you know, it's not the whiteness of his skin that caused him to do this, just as the blackness of the DC sniper had nothing to do with his, you know, his actions. However, you know, the opposite of collectivism, which is judging people based on the ideas they hold, is what you see if maybe you judge a Muslim person for committing a terrorist action. And now you say, okay, well, you know, this was done in the name of Islam. We now have an ideology we can latch onto to try and understand this violence. Or even, you know, there's a certain ideology within the criminal populations of black cultures that tends towards violence. That's something that can be studied and has nothing to do with their skin color or their, you know, general racial, you know, makeup. It's a particular ideology that leads to violence. And so that can be understood, and to understand it is the opposite of racial collectivism, because you're judging people based on their ideas, regardless of their race. So, and of course the left has every intention of blurring this important distinction so that basically this is saying, like, whenever you try to make generalizations about anyone ever at all, you're a bigot. That's basically, except when you do it to white people, of course. That's basically the implicit statement here.
Absolutely. it's one of these things that pisses me off every time these things come up, where it's like, if some white guy did it in the name of Islam and explicitly said in the name of Islam, I would judge him the same way as any brown guy who did an act of violence in the name of Islam. Like,
and that was never in question.
Right. That
people thought he may have been Muslim in the first few hours. They thought, oh, fuck, like, maybe this guy converted to Islam, because ISIS even claimed that he did.
And he apparently visited the Middle East, although, you know, that proves nothing at the moment.
Right.
So, it's this whole lone wolf thing. They're blowing this out of proportion in order to basically, you know, demonize our attempt to generalize based on ideas. And that, to me, is super dangerous. One of the other things here is that I've noticed lately that the left and the right try to jump to claim that something is terrorism, and then the other side tries to claim it's not terrorism. So we're getting to this point where the word terrorism doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, because basically no matter what happens, the one side tries to say, well, terrorism is basically any act of violence that induces terror. It's like, well, that's a stupid definition. That's not even a good reason to have a word. I would say that if we're going to talk about what terrorism is and isn't, there has to be a political component, right? Isn't it the idea to cause mass fear to gain a political end of some sort? Isn't that the whole concept behind terrorism?
It's a military tactic. Yeah.
So, yeah, this guy could be a terrorist if he had some political aim that he was trying to pursue, but wouldn't he have made it a little more obvious if that was the case?
Yeah. It was a terrorism fail, if so.
Worst terrorist ever. What does that say about white people?
What does that say about all white
people? I mean, terror... What's kind of funny is you can't have a conversation about what the word... Like, about this person's use of the word terrorism without holding in mind what terrorism is really... was supposed to mean. It basically... Terrorism, you know, after George W. Bush, terrorism has basically come to mean, like, violence perpetrated in the name of Islam, except we don't want to admit that it's Islam. That's basically what terrorism means. And so, like, by calling him a terrorist, you're destroying a word that already had a nebulous meaning. But it had a real meaning to most people. Like, when you say terrorism, everyone knows, like, okay, it was a Muslim.
Yes.
Like, it's just unspoken, like, okay, I know what that means.
Yes.
Which is kind of silly because someone like Timothy McVeigh, you would call that terrorism, right? It's just a different ideology.
Yes.
Like, his tactic was that of terrorism.
And he had a political aim.
You know, they don't have a monopoly on that military tactic, you know? Like, if you're white, you don't have to be, like, a Cuban, communist revolutionary to engage in guerrilla warfare. You can also do it if you're white. It's a multicultural. You could do it if you're Chinese. We all do it. It's my favorite thing to do in airsoft. So, you know.
Yes.
You know, don't exclude
me. here's the paragraph that I hated the most out of this article, and Justin, I'll let you rage against this paragraph in a moment. It's this. Quote, "What we are witnessing," first of all, don't take our word, guy. Okay. "What we are witnessing is the blatant fact that white privilege protects even douchebag, an alleged mass murderer, not just from being called a terrorist, but from the anger, rage, hellfire, and fury that would surely rain down if he were almost any other than a white man. His skin protects him. It also prevents our nation from having an honest conversation about why so many white men do what he did and why this nation seems absolutely determined to do next to nothing about it." What the actual fuck are you talking about?
I like it how she just slipped that one in, just boop, like, oh yeah, in so many ways.
Right, and that's the most disturbing thing is, like, can somebody tell me all the so many? Like, what does so many mean when we're talking concretely in reality? What does so many mean? Are there any statistics to back up anything close to what he's saying? I mean, is he just referring to Dylan Roof and he's referring to the guy who shot people during, what was it, The Dark Knight Rises? And now this, is that what he's saying? So three? Is that what he's saying? Yeah. Three people?
Yeah, I mean, what's the true part of what he's saying is that these mass shootings tend to be white people. But first of all, as we said on many weeks before, white people means nothing because it doesn't refer to an actual collection of human beings. It's basically not helpful because not all white people are the same. Turns out, racists. And then two,
yeah,
who cares what race these people? The race of these people doesn't tell us anything about their motives, doesn't tell us anything about who they are, doesn't tell us anything about anything.
I mean, it's
their
not
ideas
even
and their affiliations are way more important.
Right. I mean, and that's where I want to take this conversation. I'll get there in a second, but I just want to make the point that it's not even true. What were the two deadliest before this? Virginia Tech and Pulse?
I don't know off the top of my head, but they are among the deadliest, certainly.
Okay, well, we'll just say
Virginia Tech was an Asian guy.
Well, that's
right?
Exactly what I was just going to say. So we'll say the three biggest, and don't get mad at me out there if they're not the three biggest, but these are the three biggest that I remember. So we'll say that. Maybe it's just because my brother was at Virginia Tech at the time, and then Elliot is a gay guy in Orlando, so maybe it's just the connections to them. But Virginia Tech, Asian. Pulse in Orlando, wasn't he Persian? Was he Iranian? What was he? He was Middle Eastern, right?
He was Saudi.
Saudi, okay, but he was Middle Eastern.
Wait, hold on. I don't know, but he was...
He was not white. He was not white, and he was not black, right? Sean King, the writer of this article, is a race-baiting black man. But this guy...
God, and he killed 49 people. I forgot how many people died in Orlando. Yes. That's unbelievable.
Yes, but the point is, he was not white. So we have Asian, Middle Eastern...
You got it right, Justin.
What, Persian?
Yeah. Oh, no, he was Middle Eastern of some kind, but number three is Virginia Tech. You got them right in the order.
Well, I'm glad I know the statistic. This makes me feel real good about my life and our culture that I know what the top three deadliest mass shootings in modern U.S. history are. That's great knowledge to have in my life. Virginia Tech, Asian, Pulse, Middle Eastern, Las Vegas, white guy. So all we've learned is if we're giving the white people as a group credit for things, is just like Hitler, we're just really efficient at mass killing. We're not the only ones who do it. But no, the point is, this isn't even true from a cross-section, right? Everyone is doing this, right? Every race.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. I believe statistically white people commit this kind of crime more. Like, for example, black people statistically tend to commit more crime in general. But as for, like, mass shootings, it is majority white people. And I think... And obviously, there's no racial component to that. There's a culture. I think there's a cultural component.
Not at all.
There's nihilism is, like, I think there's something about, I don't know, this is only a hypothesis. I think there's something about our culture in general that condones nihilism. And so mainstream culture ends up producing some people like this, I think. Obviously, they're making their own choices, but I think my hypothesis is that the nihilism in the culture in general kind of creates this in a way that I don't think it gets created in black subculture, even though black subculture, you know, condones crimes of a different nature.
So
if that makes sense,
take this for what it is, because it's on Wikipedia and its link and their source is a Mother Jones magazine article but it said, according to a database compiled by Mother Jones magazine, the race of the shooters in mass shootings is approximately proportionate to the overall U.S. population, although Asians are overrepresented and Latinos are underrepresented.
Wow. So you mean it's based upon the demographics? Wow, shocking. I'm so surprised.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, statistically it works out that way. My point was is it doesn't matter. It's a cultural if there was a regularity, the regularity is cultural, not racial, obviously.
Yes, it is totally and absolutely cultural. And it is totally and absolutely cultural because these things shift over time, right? It's not like we've seen throughout history that one group of people is better at mass shootings than others. Like it changes based on socioeconomics and cultural ideas. But again, as someone pointed out, like this number of people is being killed every weekend in Chicago.
I saw somebody post that where it was like in 1 month or at one weekend, that was the same amount as Chicago. And then you know what somebody replied? One of the replies was, oh, so you're saying in one day somebody killed as many people as die in a month in Chicago. So they were making it seem like that's how bad Vegas was.
That was the point that we were making?
That was their response.
Way to miss the point. Thank you.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But that's how people spin this stuff.
Yes,
and I want to return to the question or the point that James raised, because I think this is the real question of the issue, and it's why is this happening? James, you're positing this nihilism, this nihilism, however the fuck you want to say that word. That's what you're positing. But is that enough? Because to me, if you were really nihilistic, would you really go and kill that many people? Like, wouldn't that be too much effort to exert? I wonder if there's some sort of element of narcissism that plays into this. That I'm so important that I'm just going to take other people's lives.
Well, Justin, everything bad that happens is caused by narcissism. So, no, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, I think I don't know. I don't claim to know the interaction there. I would imagine that you know, nihilism would lead to low self-esteem, would lead to narcissism. So it's all kind of this terrible, terrible cluster. Mackenzie had this point that, no, I shouldn't say the things that you said. Yeah. And it was a good point of yours, though. And Jordan, okay, Jordan Peterson said
this. Is great pod. I love when we talk to people off camera, off screen directly.
No, you'll look smart from this. She says, like, I think she has some sort of just sort of like insight into how someone like this feels. It's like she says it's a deep hatred for the self. And that
okay, break up with her.
And then, well, she understands people. Like, she can kind of, you know, it's not that she's felt that way.
I was
like,
joking.
She actually said that she can't imagine feeling that way, but she does kind of get it. She's like, you must hate yourself so much that that somehow that makes you like kill other people. I forget exactly, but it is a sort of self-hatred that's just an unbearable inner state. And Jordan Peterson says that it's not just a hatred for other people, it's a hatred for being itself, which Rand actually referenced too, that like nihilism it's not just that you want to destroy other people, it's that it has something to do with a hatred for existence. And that is fascinating. It sounds right, but I don't get it.
Okay, well, the question I have then, Daniel,
with projectiles.
That's the projection with projectiles edition. No, we've already named this episode. But maybe you can illuminate this a little bit more for me, Daniel.
Nope.
Maybe I'm confused.
Oh.
James seems to be saying that nihilism is not just the belief in there's nothing valuable, but also just the hatred of being. Are those the same thing?
Yes-ish. But it's basically, I mean, I wouldn't say that, I would say the mistake that you're making, Justin, is basically thinking that nihilism equates to apathy. And I don't think that's the same thing. Nihilism can be an active hatred, and oftentimes probably is an active hatred.
Basically, but isn't that anti-nihilism? Like, how can you hate something if there are no values? Hate presupposes that you can emotionally invest in something.
Well, think about the sort of intellectual side of nihilism, like Victor Vitanza and the horrible douchebag rhetoricians around the country, who basically their quote-unquote positive philosophy of the world is you must actively destroy values and actively destroy power structures. That, to me, is the intellectual side of nihilism, which is we don't believe in anything because values are meaningless and life is meaningless, but that means that we can't allow values to exist. We can't allow values to have power. We can't allow power structures, period.
But see, to me, this is the same thing as sort of like, you know, communism, the idea that communism can't ever actually exist, or to get really super fucking obscure and abstract and I can't think of the other word, esoteric. It's the whole idea of the foundationalism versus anti-foundationalism. You can't ever have anti-foundationalism. It becomes foundationalism. That's the sense I'm getting from this idea of nihilism. Like, you can't ever have true lack of valuing because human psychology doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
The only way to truly be nihilistic is just to kill yourself.
I would say that's right, but in practice it doesn't particularly matter.
Yeah,
someone
decides that the destruction of values is positive, whether or not you call that nihilism, a lot of bad shit's going to happen.
Well, then I think we should not use the term nihilism anymore. I think we should just say what motivates them is the destruction of value.
That's like saying that like anarchy has never existed because we've never had a stateless society where security companies like, you know, were able to exist like in peace with one another, or communism has never existed. It's like, yeah, it's true that these or like nihilism has never existed because you can't like literally self-negate on that level because you commit a contradiction. Like, that's true, but all you're doing when you say that is you're talking about a feature of attempting to live that way. Of course that ideology contains contradictions and therefore is impossible to play out in the way you want it to. But we still need to call that attempt to be a nihilist something. So
and those contradictions are what lead to the actions. Is that what we're saying?
I don't know if the contradictions lead to the actions. I think the ideology leads to the actions, and the ideology is self-contradictory. So it becomes nebulous as to what exactly the motive was. Because you're noticing one of the contradictions yourself. If you just are a nihilist and you don't care about anything, why destroy? Why not just lay there like in The Big Lebowski? You know, you know, it, like, that's kind of, that's one way you could imagine being a nihilist. It's just, oh.
Right, yeah. Isn't that the point of the John Goodman quote where he says, say what you want about National Socialism, but at least it's a fucking ethos, man?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that why he says that? Like,
right, and the nihilists are ineffective, of course.
Right.
This guy, well, like, I mean, that's what I don't get. He is effective. It must be, maybe it's a different thing. I don't know. Yeah, that's actually a really interesting... That makes me sort of reevaluate this. I mean, he's definitely ineffective insofar as, like, his ability to benefit his own life, you know.
He's not, though, because he had a lot of money. I mean, if you look at the money that he had, like, gambled away and given away in the weeks leading up to this, I mean, it's a substantial amount of money, and he afforded all the weapons he had. So this guy was not ineffective in affecting anything in the world. He knew how to affect the world.
Yeah,
but he turned it to this dark purpose for some reason.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's still very ineffective. Just, this isn't even necessarily a point to argue against you. This is just sort of something to bring up in general. Imagine the pain inherent in feeling this way while living a normal life. While going around and interacting with people normally when you have the capacity to just kill them. Or maybe even the desire to kill them. That must be an unbearable inner state to, like,
I agree, but
that level.
I agree. That's why I think it's not... My point is just that it's not that simplistic where you can say someone's ineffective or effective. Where this guy was very effective in some ways in life and very ineffective in other ways in life, which manifests in this pain that you're talking about. But he's very effective in the ways that he was able to, you know, build a life for himself and make sorts of money. And which led to him being able to perpetrate this act. You know, someone who's ineffective wouldn't be able to have the means and the knowledge and the sort of, there's a weird sort of twisted self-confidence to committing an act like this. So I'm saying it's not that simplistic to say he's ineffective or effective. He's effective in some ways and ineffective in other ways. And that's the question for me, is how do we get to this point that there are people like that are happening? I mean, if you even look at, you know, Virginia Tech and you look at Pulse, look at what these guys had to go through planning-wise. I mean, Elliot Rodgers as well, right? Planning-wise. And the things these people had to do that shows a level of ability and effectiveness. So there's something, I don't know what the answer is, but there's something terribly wrong that's leading to this point. Daniel?
Is this our transition to the NFL? Is that what's terribly wrong?
Oh. Yeah, if that's how you want to transition.
One last note before we transition is I actually knew a fair, well, not, I knew my, I'm actually not sure she wants to be sort of publicly identified, but a girl, a young woman that I've known since I was like 5 years old, not Mackenzie. I've known Mackenzie for like 2 years, but not my girlfriend. Anyway, a young woman I've known since I was like five, was there, with her friends, and she got away. She booked it immediately when she heard the fire.
There being Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was at the concert, and she ran with her friends, and her friends got away unharmed, physically anyway. But she
glad to hear that.
Yeah, she tells me that she saw people get shot as she was running away.
Well, I hope she gets the psychological help she's going to need to cope with that, because that is terrifying to have. I can't even imagine that. Like, I posted a story on the Midside Facebook page, so if you liked us to show that it was real, you would have read that this week. It was actually, my girlfriend sent it to me. It was a very harrowing, well-written tale about this guy and girl who met at the show. They had never seen each other before, and they met, and they were talking, and she got shot right next to him. And he, like, jumped on her to cover the body and then put her in a pickup truck and then went around Vegas trying to find her afterwards. And just the idea that you could be sitting there talking to somebody and getting along with them really well, and they just randomly get shot, like, that is just a terrifying notion.
Yeah.
It's...
Wow. Yeah.
Another article that I'm going to share with you that I found just a few minutes ago, and we'll put it on the Midside page. I haven't read it yet, but it's from April of this year, actually. It's an op-ed in the New York Times. The title is America, From Exceptionalism to Nihilism. The U.S. leads the world in its helplessness before the dissolution of its most cherished values, is the subtitle.
Very interesting. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. All right. Things that aren't that interesting. The NFL and Cam Newton. Okay. This week, Cam Newton got in trouble because he was a sexist, apparently, and he had to apologize, of course. So, apparently a female reporter named Jordan Rodriguez, is that a misspelling? Should it be Rodriguez? I have no idea. She's a football writer with the Charlotte Observer, asked an insightful question about the team's passing game, to which Cam Newton replied, quote, "It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. It's funny." Meaning wide receiver routes that they run. Of course, this released a torrent of criticism that Newton has been dismissive of the female reporter and that his quotes were sexist and objectionable and disrespectful to all women. What is it? Dannon? Is that who was sponsoring him? The yogurt company dropped him as a sponsor. Gatorade released a statement saying that his comments were objectionable and disrespectful. The NFL said Wednesday that Cam Newton's comments were just plain wrong and disrespectful to the exceptional female reporters and all journalists who cover our league. And then Cam Newton released this very heartfelt apology, saying that the joke is really on him.
Via social media.
Yes. Justin, is it time, for once, to defend Cam Newton?
It is time to defend Cam Newton, because he was so dismissive of her as a woman that he didn't answer her question. I'm, of course, being sarcastic because he did answer her question, so clearly he took her seriously. And there is a huge amount of context dropping going on here. He looked down at her, and she was in the front row, and he was remarking about the fact that in press conferences, it is not often that women ask questions and that those are the type of questions they ask. It was not any statement about anything inherent about the female gender. It was simply a statement of, it was a cultural observation, and it was an observation about his experience. So that is my defense of Cam Newton. Now I'm going to be critical of him. This is a PR issue.
I knew it wouldn't last long.
This is a PR issue. This is the, whoever runs the Carolina Panthers PR department needs to be reprimanded. It needs to be pulled aside and said, how'd you let him do this? Get him under control. Like, do you think Bill Belichick would ever let this happen? This is why Belichick says as little as possible during press conferences, because he knows they're going to spin it any other way they can. And this is just the way they're spinning things nowadays. Look, I feel bad for Newton because he is not a sexist and he was not trying to be a sexist or make a sexist statement. But I don't feel bad for him because he's the fucking knucklehead who said this shit. Like, just answer the goddamn question, dude.
Yeah. In the hyper-charged, politically correct, nonsense, farcical world in which we live, the mandate for players on any given team should be unequivocally, under no circumstances should you give commentary. Period. The end.
Yes.
I don't care if you're trying to make a joke. I don't care if you're trying to be serious. No matter what, no commentary. End of story, because this is what the media will do to you.
Right. And what was the question that she asked about routes? Do you know it?
If it was, it was about Funches. Is that his name? And if his route running was getting better over the season or something like that.
Right. So Ron Funches apparently has transitioned to wide receiver on the Carolina Panthers.
He dropped all weight and then boom.
Yeah. He wanted to get down to 205 and then bam, he's now wide receiver. No, this is very simple. She asked you that question. Just go, yes, he's getting better. I agree. He's getting better. He's been practicing really hard. We practice really hard every week and we're playing well together. And I appreciate how hard he's working. And yes, I believe he's getting better as well. And you see the results in the field. Bam. Move on. That's it. That's all you need to say.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. This whole story is a non-story to me.
I have a different viewpoint on this. I think we should be, from now on, I don't know how effective any of this will be, but from now on, I think we should be very hard. We should not defend people in this situation. If they cave and apologize, we should boycott them just as hard as we should then demand that their advertisements get pulled, because what that would do is if you could somehow en masse, you know, make this an issue where you say something like this and, you know, the left starts screaming for your blood, if you give it to them, you also sacrifice the business of the other side. If the normal people came down just as hard and said, okay, if you apologize, we're boycotting you too, and then you get nothing. Then you get no support from either side. So you can choose us or them. That's what we can do. It just occurs to me, you're going to get less capitulation to the left if that was the policy of ordinary people.
That's a very interesting point. And you're asking Justin and I to boycott Cam Newton. Done and done.
Yeah.
Next story.
We'll
tired of getting catcalled.
Hold on. We'll save this for Belichick your premises, but Cam Newton is fucking overrated. Continue.
What?
Do okay. you just not like tired him as a player? Or you don't like him personally either?
I mean, it's a false dichotomy. Like, he can't handle the pressure because he sucks as a person. Like,
okay, yeah. I thought you were just like, oh, he's on a team that, like, beats the Patriots, so I don't like him. Like, but you're saying, like, he's not an admirable player in general.
Correct. He's a shitty person, so he can't handle the pressure mentally when it gets down to crunch time.
Interesting.
It's one of these things where he's on the, you know, off the field, he's just as much of a social justice nonsense warrior as everyone else. So there's a little bit of Schadenfreude here, but nonetheless.
Yeah, you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
That's right. Speaking of swords, tired of getting catcalled, this woman started taking selfies with the catcallers, and the results are pretty disturbing. I like to read these headlines in my mind like an announcer on South Park. Yeah. And the results are pretty disturbing. Yes, okay. There's nothing that makes a woman's skin crawl quite like getting catcalled on the street. 20-year-old Amsterdam-based student Noah Jansma, much like the rest of us, was pretty fed up with it and decided to do something about it. Throughout the month of September, she took a selfie with every single creep who harassed her and uploaded them on Instagram, captioning each one with the words of her abusers. Justin, have you checked out this Instagram feed?
I have checked out the Instagram. I have looked at all 23 pictures of catcallers. I'm saying that for a reason, and we'll return to that for a second.
Yes.
Indeed. I actually, this is going to be the episode Justin defends people before talking shit about people. This is what I will say about this. Kudos to her for her creativity and use of social media. You know what? If you're going to complain about this shit, at least she did something about it and she documented it. Rather than just doing these, like, disconnected from reality claims that I get catcalled all the time and blah, and these edited videos that are clearly done to, you know, fit the agenda without ever proving anything in reality. She actually did something and created something based upon what she said she's suffering. So I have to give her that.
Yeah.
And?
But, yo, if you get, like, so this is supposed to be every day for a month in September, and there are 30 days in September? Yes?
Yes.
23 times? Am I an insensitive dude by saying that's not that bad?
I feel like that's pretty bad, where you're getting verbally harassed the majority of the month at least once a day.
Okay, well, that's the word I want to ask about. Harassment. Is this really abuse and harassment? Because here's the disturbing thing to me.
Yeah, it's harassment.
I don't know. And that's the question I have to ask. Like, in this article, it said the Netherlands has enacted a law. Can you find the quote, Daniel, the Bored Panda quote, where it says they've enacted a law where men can be fined $250 for catcalling?
Nah, I mean, you can't do that.
Yes.
But that's my question.
Punishable by law, 190 euros. Yeah.
Right. So that's my question is, what constitutes harassment and what constitutes catcalling to the point that they can be fined? Because how do you fine these people? You just say the woman says they were catcalled and then you get paid $250? Like, the government gets $250? So then, if a woman just gets hit on and she doesn't like it, can she just say it's catcalling?
Yeah, that's the problem here. The thing is,
because
is,
even some of the ones she put in there is, yeah, some of them are she's being yelled at, which is fucking annoying, and it's ignorant, and it's classless. I agree 100%. But there are others where it was literally, the quote is, the guy was like, can I have your number? Like,
yeah, that's, I mean, there's
not the best approach. Like, the strategy of it is shit, but, you know, is that catcalling?
Well, I was actually talking to Mackenzie about this story. Mackenzie's where I get all of my interpretations now, by the way.
This is no longer the
Daniel and Justin show. It's now the Mackenzie, Daniel, and Justin show.
Yeah.
But she had an insight into this. It's just like, It's a huge difference between hitting on a woman and catcalling her. A catcall is deliberately trying to make them feel uncomfortable. You're trying to, unfortunately, we have this, you know, sex values dichotomy in our culture. And so a lot of times what a catcall is you're deliberately trying to demean a woman by sexualizing her. Not to say that sexualizing a woman necessarily demeans her, but that's what they're trying to use that cultural trope of like, oh, you're just a sex object and therefore I'm demeaning you. Like, they're using that against the woman to, as a form of bullying, essentially. And sometimes they're just hitting on you, which, you know, but there's okay, a huge emotional difference. You know when one's happening and the other isn't. And so, obviously, the feminists are trying to package deal the good with the bad here. They're trying to
right,
make
and
all,
that's the point.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Right. And that's the point I'm making. So that's the question I have. Out of the 23 that happened to her that month, how many were the negative and how many were the positive? That is my real question. I'm really glad. And I don't know if
the
midsiders out there.
Based on the appearance of these gentlemen, I would say 80% were the bad type.
Is it, though?
Okay.
Or is it,
I'm basing it only by their appearance.
But I would push back on that psychologizing. If we're going to psychologize, I would say maybe
what?
Because of their appearance.
What?
No.
Found a line for Justin psychologizing?
I'm going to posit an opposite psychologizing. That's
okay.
All.
Okay.
It's not. I'm okay with this conversation. I just, like, let's get into it then. I would posit the opposite. Isn't it just that with their appearance not being that attractive, that they think this is their recourse? Sort of like guys who go on online dating and spam every woman. You know, they just catcall every attractive woman who walks by and hopes one of them has low enough standards to sleep with them?
It's not. Yeah. That's what has to be emphasized, though, Justin. I thought this for a long time, and Mackenzie opened my eyes to this. It's not a dating strategy.
For these men?
I don't
for
think
these
so.
Men.
I think it's just bullying. Because it doesn't make any goddamn sense. Like, oh, she's really going to be impressed that I, like, can whistle and, like, demean her in public. Like, that's
well,
really
well, and
gonna
now I'm
going
to push
her.
Back on you with the online dating thing. Do you really think these guys on online dating, when they go, hey, you're really hot, let's fuck, or man, I'd love to dominate you, or whatever fucking ignorant message they send, do you really think they're doing that to bully? Do you think they're signing up for Tinder and going, oh man, I really can't wait to bully all these women on here?
Or do they really think
that that's an effective strategy?
I think they go onto Tinder probably with good motives to just date, but their psychology of wanting to make people feel bad so they can feel better about themselves starts to come out in the wash when they actually start to try and find women. I think that is what happens.
Daniel?
It's not planned.
I'm trying to find the video, and if I will share it with you. But a few years ago, someone went out and did a, like, man-on-the-street documentary asking men why they catcalled. And obviously this is self-reporting, and thus it's impossible to know. But the majority of the men in the video said, because it works. Like, if they do it to every woman they see, they eventually, some woman with terribly low self-esteem does take it seriously in some way.
All right, and that's where I'm going to push back against you and Mackenzie James. I think you guys are assuming the premise of interpersonal hostility. The idea that everyone is out there and they're hostile towards each other. Why can't there just be dudes out there who have such low self-esteem, but they want that connection, and this is their best way of trying? Now, again, I think it's a shitty way of trying. I think they have personal issues. I think it's a really bad method because you're going to end up with low-quality encounters. But why do we have to assume it's negative? I think we only assume it's negative if we're assuming interpersonal hostility.
We're categorizing it differently. Like, for example, there's probably a way to say to a woman on the street, hey, babe, like, say it like that. There's probably a way to say that in a way we wouldn't consider catcalling, where it's like it's not clear what your intentions are. Or, you know, like you said, just like asking for a woman's number. In fact, Mackenzie actually told a story where a friend of hers actually picked up a girlfriend by eyeballing her in the car, talking to her at a stoplight, and then she threw him a piece of paper with her number written on it. Like, and then they ended up dating. And so when I hear a story like that, I don't think low self-esteem. I think he's a smooth talker. He's charming. Like, he was able to just notice. But there's a difference between, you know, notice her and, like, get his personality out there. There's a difference between that and certain things that men do. Like, if you look at some of these men, they're, you know, they're touching her during this picture. Like, it's clear that there's a disrespect there that's coupled with their, you know, desires.
I don't disagree with that, but that's why I'm again saying that it has to do with their class level and their education level and all of these things. I don't think it's necessarily this malevolent intent to, like, bully and tear down. I mean, this attack on catcalling in general is exactly what you just said, this story. Whether true or not, that seems really, like, what'd she make, a fucking paper airplane and throw it through the driver's window of the car? That story seems a little far-fetched to me. But back in the day, you know, in Americana, as we like to say, wasn't catcalling, like, a thing that was considered a good thing? Like, wasn't it, like, a cute thing that happened in movies and stuff? Guys whistling at girls and things? Before we assumed this interpersonal hostility?
Yeah, that's a good point. It was probably done in a way that didn't... And there's... The emotional tone says everything. But at the same time, it's also very hard to describe emotional tone.
We're now just taking the term catcalling, which used to have, I wouldn't say a benevolent ring to it, but at least a less hostile ring to it. And we're now mushing it together with this concept of sexual harassment, which there is a difference. There is a difference in being aggressive with a woman. But, like, every time I see these instances of catcalling, even in this woman's photos, like, many of them are just like, hey, baby, you're hot, or whatever. Which is the less sophisticated version of what was happening in the 40s of whistling at a woman, okay? Like, to me, like, there is no difference in that to me than there is in online seeing people put out messages of, like, all libertarians want to rape babies and kill women and murder everyone in the world. And I don't see that, like, you know how many times I see that, by the way, on a day-to-day basis about how my ideology is terrible and the things I believe in are the worst things in the world? That to me is the way worse, I think, than someone saying, hey, baby, you're hot. And I don't give a fuck. Move on. Like, I don't know. Faiza has the same attitude about this whole thing, which is like, just move on with your fucking life. Just keep walking. Put earbuds in. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's indulging this victim culture, definitely.
But there,
yeah.
Look, I acknowledge that there is a distinction between that kind of thing and then someone, like, following you around and harassing you. Like, that's a major difference. Or being violent or suggesting violence or whatever. That's a huge difference. And one of them, I think, should be punishable. If someone suggests violence against you in a sexual way, that should be punishable by law.
100%. My thing is, when you're talking about this aggression, this is being tied in with this idea of demonizing and villainizing masculinity. So any sort of aggression and assertiveness is being seen as bad and evil, and you can be fined $250 for it.
Yes, indeed.
That's the issue.
I will say that there's a deep irony to this story about the catcaller woman is that, you know, she said she was only going to do it for a month or whatever, but the reason she stopped doing it at 1 month was not because that was her original plan, but because she's been called a wild racist all over social media. Anyone notice that
found
the majority
story
of her photos are minorities, minority men?
Yeah, well, Midsider Katrina sent me the story, and that was the first thing she said. She said, how long until this woman is called a racist?
Yep,
and that's another
happened.
Element that nobody wants to talk about with this catcalling is who are the people doing this? Who are the people doing this? That's the question.
Yeah, it's mostly minority men. It's mostly Middle Eastern men. And by the way, it's in Europe. This is not in the United States.
Right, this specific example was in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But when you think about America and you think about who's doing it, who is it doing it in America? That's the question. Ask yourself.
Tony Montana.
Now, again, let's go up in Montana. Yeah.
Tony Montana.
Oh, Tony Montana. I was like, yeah, all the catcalling going on in Montana.
Yeah. Nothing gets a girl going like walking up to her and like sticking your tongue between your fingers to you know, show her what you're capable of.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, Harvey Weinstein.
I want to make one final point before we move on. I want to return to the point about collectivism versus culture in the first article. And I want to say that, again, when we're pointing out who are the people doing this, we're not saying it's a race thing. We're saying it's a culture thing that happens to be associated with certain races. Just like we were talking about with violence and violent crimes in inner cities such as Chicago.
Totally. And one other point, again, referring back to where I get all of my ideas, Faiza, you know, like when she went to France recently, catcalling in France is 10 orders of magnitude worse than it is in the United States. Like, and it's completely a cultural thing. And here it is. This isn't a race thing. It's a cultural thing again, but like a lot of it is Syrian refugees. A lot of it. So.
Yep.
Okay. Now that we have officially made ourselves part of the alt-right movement, Harvey Weinstein. yet again, another hyper-left Hollywood bigwig is being has apparently paid off sexual harassment accusers for decades. This is a story from the New York Times that was a breaking story this week and an incredible sort of revelation. It begins like this. 2 decades ago, the Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein invited Ashley Judd to the Peninsula Beverly Hills Hotel for what the young actress expected to be a business breakfast meeting. Instead, he had her sent up to his room, where he appeared in a bathrobe, and asked if he could give her a massage or she could watch him shower, she recalled in an interview. How do I get out of this room as fast as possible without alienating Harvey Weinstein, Ms. Judd said she remembers thinking. And then in 2014... he invited Emily Nestor, who had worked just one day as a temporary employee, to the same hotel and made another offer. If she accepted his sexual advances, he would boost her career, according to the account she provided to colleagues who sent them to the Weinstein Company executives. This goes on and on and on and on and on, and apparently this has been going on for decades and has been basically an open, not even, I mean, I guess that's the word, an open secret in Hollywood that this was going on, and apparently one person in this article said basically, look, it's shocking to me that it took this long for this behavior to come out, because pretty much everyone knows this is going on. Justin, what the fuck is going on with Hollywood men who claim to be feminists who are secretly abusing women?
Well, we've talked about this before with Devin Farsi and then Harry Knowles, and now it's not surprisingly all the way at the top with one of the biggest, you know, leftists who's up there saying he's a feminist supporter, is they're acting this way because this is the way they believe. And this is the way they believe about themselves, about how they can get what they want. You know, they want to have these type of relationships with women and they believe this is the only way they can get it. And they're not really believing in these ideologies because, you know, the feminism as it's known in today's day and age, it's not a real equality movement and it's not about respect for the self. So it's not a surprise. That's one of the biggest things to come out of this article is feminists saying, and there are articles that have come out and said, you know, we have to shame and get rid of these pseudo allies, these men who are pretending to be allies. It's like, no, you're all pretending to be allies. None of this has anything to do with actual quality and actual individuality. This is all an agenda to get power because you can't believe you can get it by being a productive human being. I mean, I ranted about this when people were calling 300 an alt-right fascist movie. It's the same type of people. I mean, what's the list of films in that article? While I'm talking here, Daniel, can you find the list of films that he... These are the films they most wanted you to pay attention to that Harvey Weinstein produced. So if you can find that list...
Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Yes.
Pulp Fiction and Good Will Hunting and the television show Project Runway.
Okay. Now, I haven't seen Good Will Hunting, but besides that one, which I guess is pretty decent, I don't know. But are any of those any good? And look at the material they have. And that's the best of what this guy created?
Yeah.
I mean, again, we see these people who go towards naturalism, who embrace these ideologies, they have this intense hatred of the self, which leads to this interpersonal hostility, which leads to acting this way. And look, it's on all sides of it, right? I've just, you know, I've skewered all these people over and over again, and I'm raking Harvey Weinstein over the coals. But can we talk about Ashley Judd for a second? What did she say her thought was when this was going on? The quote in the article is what?
It's possible without pissing off Harvey Weinstein.
Without pissing off Harvey Weinstein. Like, are you serious right now? I don't care how powerful of a person you are. And, you know, I guess they would say this is my white male privilege speaking. But... if somebody is attacking me in that way and threatening me in that way, my number one value is my life, right? I can only achieve what I want to achieve. I can only make this show. I can only write what I want to write. I can only, direct and produce the shorts that I want to produce by being alive and by respecting myself as a baseline. So my first thought in any situation like that is not, I need to get out of here without pissing the guy off. My first thought is, I need to get out of here because that guy pissed me off and he disrespected me. I don't give a fuck if he's president of the goddamn United States of America. So it's all sides.
It's a terrible band. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that band very, very much. Thank you. But you get what I'm saying, that this is all sides and it's all this pretend bullshit and it's manifesting. And then they're saying, oh, wow, what a surprise. We need to get these people out. Like, no, this is a result of your ideology and the life you're living.
Yeah, I find the package dealing of, I mean, here we see the package deal of political and economic power, or in political here, meaning just like physical power. Like, this man isn't physically restraining her. He's just using the fact that he can offer her opportunities. It's a bribe, not a threat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. I mean,
and it's also, no, it's also negative,
it this way,
though,
though.
James has gotten
away with this shit. It's still wrong what he's doing. Like,
no, I agree. But what I'm saying
is,
there's
a certain level where we're looking at this wrong when we say, like, oh, well, she's powerless in this situation. Like, yeah, that's not right. But he's still doing something very wrong. And the fact that he got away with it for so long does imply a certain power, and which implies a certain threat. So I don't know if you can completely overlook what they're talking about here. The problem is we're at a point here where we cannot trust the left at all. We have everything they say, we have to just treat with huge amounts of suspicion, even when they're making some good points here and there on the fringes.
I'm not overlooking at all. That's what I'm saying. I'm raking him over the coals. I'm calling him out for this. But what you're missing is, it's not only that she's offering him an opportunity, it's the fear that she's going to be blackballed if she doesn't go around along with it.
Right.
So he basically calls these people into a room. He calls Ashley Judd in and he goes, okay, sleep with me. If you sleep with me, you'll get opportunities. If you don't, you'll be out of the industry.
That's the implication.
So, right. Yeah. They feel like it gets to that point. But what I'm saying is, it's only gotten to that point because they've all already embraced the ideology that's enabling this. If this was an ideology based upon actual merit and based upon individualism and respect for the self, somebody like him wouldn't amass the economic power to get away with this. And then they make it worse by digging in their heels and saying, oh, well, he's just not a true believer.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're saying he's the one who's using this in a backhanded way. So rather than, you know, us calling him out, and that's what I'm doing. I'm calling them out and saying, no, you're all doing this in a backhanded, underhanded way. He just was dumb enough to get caught, and now you're trying to cut bait when really it's all of you, and you're all causing
them?
The problems. These feminists who are just using this to, I mean, look at, like, who's feminist frequency on Twitter. Her entire thing is all the money she has and all the support she has is... This is the same thing as it's the aristocracy of pull, all right? You want to make a Rand reference? That's all it is, ultimately. It's, oh, all the people who believe like us, we're going to raise up, and all the people who don't, we're going to push down because they can't get ahead based on ability.
Yeah, that's what really, it's clear when you just look at the sorts of movies that end up getting made, like the sort of writing that gets into movies, and just all these stories you hear. What the fuck is wrong with Hollywood, where it's so not a meritocracy? How the fuck does that happen when there's so much money to be made? I don't get it. I think you're totally right.
For the longest
here.
Time, these gatekeepers like Harvey Weinstein were the only way to get something made and seen. I think you're starting to see that aristocracy crumble now with the advent of all these different outlets for content. And basically this weekend, you know, huge movie like Blade Runner 49 crashing at the box office because no one gives a fuck.
Oh, I heard and it got really good reviews.
They did
it
get
did
really
get
good reviews,
good reviews
but
no
one
crashed.
But it still crashed because the point is that the market is not responding to the stuff that people are, that like these companies are shoving down our throats anymore.
Well, and that is a perfect transition, I think. Why don't we talk about that? Because I'm going to review that.
Okay.
So why don't we talk about that? Daniel, everything you're saying, just hold on to it. Bring it back out. And we're going to talk about
more points about Lisa Bloom. That's
okay. Okay, then talk about Lisa Bloom. Hold on to that, and we'll talk about what you're saying in the review section. So talk about Lisa Bloom.
Lisa Bloom. You know who Lisa Bloom is?
No.
Anybody?
No.
She's Weinstein's lawyer, but more importantly, she's Gloria Steinem's daughter. Gloria Steinem and Lisa Bloom
James?
Have made
see?
A fucking career out of holding up women against men. And now Lisa Bloom, the lawyer of Mr. Weinstein, comes out and says things like this. Mr. Weinstein is, quote, an old dinosaur learning new ways. She said she had to, and she had to explain to him that due to his power difference between a major studio head like him and most others in the industry, whatever his motives, some of his words and behaviors can be perceived as inappropriate, even intimidating. Even in this, even with all the overwhelming evidence, you still have to take this guy and defend him because he is this liberal icon and you can't totally trash him. That, to me, is unfathomable. Not that he doesn't deserve legal representation. Everyone deserves legal representation. But this is specifically a lawyer who she and her mother have made a career on holding up women against men.
Correct.
It's incredible.
And that's the point, James, and that's what I'm talking about, is look at these people. They're still not sticking to their words. If she really believed what she believed, she wouldn't defend this guy at all. And she would say, I recognize that he deserves a right to counsel, as Daniel has just said, but based upon the issues in this case, I cannot represent him based upon my values and what I have stood up for in life.
Yeah.
But she still defends him because what's more important? The aristocracy of pull is what's more important. The relationships and getting ahead based on who you know, not your ability and your values and principles, is what's more important to these people.
And you can see that there's, like, the way I'd put this is it's like, the left, because they generated it, they kind of play both sides of the interpersonal hostility complex. Like, I'm not describing that very well, but do you see what I'm saying? It's like okay, well, if you just accept that this is how men will treat women, you're allowed to play both sides. You're allowed to simultaneously denounce man is fundamentally evil, but then also excuse him when he is actually evil by his own choice.
Yes, it's the anti-dog-eat-dog rule. It's the idea that we don't want dog-eat-dog competition because that means we're trying to harm each other, but because we know that that's human nature, we're going to harm you first. That's what it is.
Yeah, it gives this licensing.
Shit. Yes.
Yeah. All right. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Blade Runner sucks. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, well, yes, we're going
to
get to
that. That's
our
review. Oh, there's so more to your review other than that?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give reasons because we're objective here in the mid-side. So if you want to hear me talk about why Blade Runner 2049 is not a very good movie, stick around for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. As we've already alluded to earlier in the episode, in the news section, if you were just listening to it, I saw Blade Runner 2049. I saw it last night. So, no, two nights ago? I don't remember. Yeah, two nights ago. That's how long ago it was, or how long ago I wish it had been since I had seen this movie. So I want to talk about this a little bit. First of all, I have not seen the original. Have either of you seen the original Blade Runner?
Shockingly, no.
No, me neither, so...
No. Now, that's the question I have to ask. This is a cultural iconic, the original movie. It's a cultural icon. It's an iconic movie. I have not seen it because I always got the impression that it was one of these movies that was very overhyped. You know, sometimes you see cult movies and you're like, this is terrible. Why is it so revered? And that's why I avoided it. Did you guys have similar reasons, or what were your reasons for avoiding it?
That was basically mine. I mean, I'd seen clips of it and it just occurred. It didn't occur to me that this was going to be a value add to my life.
That's always been my thoughts on the original Blade Runner. Whenever I think about that, like that effect you're talking about, Justin, I think of Apocalypse Now. Like I watched it once, and like, you know, I'm sitting there for what feels like 6 hours, and I'm like, God, nothing's happening. And then I wiggle the mouse, and it's like there's still 2 hours and 40 minutes left in the movie, and I'm just like, all right, forget it.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because this movie was nearly 3 hours long, and it's incredibly slow, and I guess that's very similar to the original. It's also very similar to this director's previous movie. Now, I don't remember the director's name. I can't pronounce it properly. It starts with a V, and this is the guy who directed Arrival, starring Amy Adams. I don't believe either of you saw that movie.
No, but I was more curious about that movie than this one.
Certainly. No, we both saw that movie.
Oh, you saw it as well? Okay.
Yeah, Daniel, saw Arrival. It's where the woman learns the alien circle language, and then she can see backward in time.
Never saw it. Thank you, though.
That's a more interesting summary of that movie than that movie actually is.
Well, Arrival was good.
Well, then you might like this movie. You might like Blade Runner. So I would say the same thing about Blade Runner that I would say about Arrival. Arrival is a very slow movie with a very common, played out, boring sci-fi trope with a great performance from the lead actress. So Amy Adams is wonderful. She's wonderful in that movie. I mean, Jeremy Renner is even pretty good in that movie. But overall, it's just sort of like it's been done before. It's not interesting. But the director does know what he's doing. He's very atmospheric. He knows what he's trying to portray. And it's the same thing here with Blade Runner. Blade Runner has great performances from Harrison Ford, from Ryan Gosling, from Jared Leto, from all of the actors. But the problem is, this is a played out sci-fi trope. I mean, if you've seen Battlestar Galactica, especially the reboot, this has been done before. The basic premise of Blade Runner is somebody has created androids and they're called replicants. Now, in the original movie, the replicants eventually were freed by Harrison Ford. They rebelled. And they had to be put down by humans. In the new movie, Jared Leto's character Wallace has created an empire by buying the replicants, but only creating replicants that now obey. So there's going to be no more rebellion. There's not going to be a rebellion anymore because the replicants only obey. But they still have to kill the old replicants. And the people who kill the replicants are called Blade Runners. In the original movie, that's what Harrison Ford was. He was a Blade Runner who hunted down the rebellious replicants and killed them. Well, in this movie, the Blade Runner is Ryan Gosling. But the twist is, he's one of the new replicants. So it's sort of like, oh, he's hunting down his own kind and killing them. Now, as the movie progresses, you find out that the original replicants were able to give birth. There was a miracle of a birth, and he's trying to hunt down the child. So this whole movie is about him trying to find the identity of the child and then introduce the child's father to the child. The child's father is obviously Harrison Ford. And that's it. That's the movie. It's very small scale, just focused on these characters, even though there's all this attention paid to the world building that these people live in. So it's supposed to be this statement on humanity and the self and what the purpose and value of humanity and what defines humanity is. No comments from anyone else? I figured somebody would chime in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to really... Yeah, you're kind of right. This is just kind of, you know, a really basic sci-fi trope that doesn't... It's been done before and doesn't need to be played out. To be fair to Arrival, though, I had never seen that sci-fi trope played out before, so it was fun to watch it played out.
Well, and that's part of what this is when you're bringing sci-fi to a mainstream audience, then this becomes new to people. But this definitely is not new to people, which is part of why people are trying to see it, or people wanted to see it, and why they're trying to sell it. This is why they're trying to sell it, but this is why people don't want to see it, is because they've seen this sort of, it's been done in the mainstream before. I mean, Blade Runner, there's nothing different, I'm sure, from the original Blade Runner. And, you know, Battlestar Galactica was very popular. But I want to talk about a big spoiler here for a second. So if you want to see this movie, which I wouldn't suggest seeing this movie, here's a spoiler for it. So tune out now. And I will, when I'm done with the spoiler, I will say balls. The disturbing part about this movie philosophically is how it ends. So through the whole movie, Ryan Gosling is trying to find the kid. And he ends up believing that he is the kid because he has this memory in him that, you know, he realizes he thinks it's a real memory because replicants have memories put into them so they can simulate being human because they're obviously created so they don't have memories. And he goes to this woman and she creates memories and she watches the memory from his head and goes, yes, this is a real memory. And he believes that the real memory is because it's his. But when it gets to the end of the movie, he realizes it was the woman's memory. She is Harrison Ford's daughter. And then the movie becomes about the most important thing. If we're not the special one, like somebody says to him, you know, you wanted to believe you were the special one, and we all want to believe that. But sometimes what's most important is just to be in service or die for a cause. And then the movie ends with him dying on the steps of the woman, the special child's, like, habitat where she lives to be protected, while Harrison Ford walks in and sees her. And the movie ends with Ryan Gosling dying on the front steps. And then the director bitches out, right? So if this is what you're going for and that's your tragic ending, the end of the movie should be, he had a pull-out aerial shot looking down at Ryan Gosling dead on the steps. And that should have been the end. It should have been a tragic story about the importance of that tragedy. But he then cuts to the shot of the happy ending of Harrison Ford meeting his daughter as if somehow that redeems Ryan Gosling, and that adds value to Ryan Gosling's life that he died with the knowledge that other people were going to have that happiness. So that's the end of the spoiler, balls, unless you guys want to keep talking about it.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that's... You know what that reminds me of is, you ever seen the movie Moon?
No.
Just Moon. That is a story that is completely a trope, and it just takes an eternity for it to play out. Like, I knew everything that was going to happen in the entire movie, like, within 5 minutes, and then I'm like, I kept thinking, like, oh, there has to be a twist, because, like, everyone knows how this story goes, but then everything just goes exactly the way the trope goes in the entire movie.
Yep.
And I'm sick of this whole, so wait, Justin, why do you find it, I don't know, contradictory or inconsistent that they show that Ryan Gosling died for something at the end? Spoilers, sorry, balls.
What do you mean inconsistent?
Well, contradictory. You were saying, like, they could have focused on tragedy. He could have been consistent and focused on tragedy, but instead he decided to...
Oh, I think you're misunderstanding me.
Okay, sorry.
The whole movie is from Ryan Gosling's perspective.
Right.
So the movie should have ended with him dying on the steps with the knowledge that that happened. The fact that they had to show it took the audience out of Ryan Gosling's perspective for once in the movie and put it into the other perspective to say, oh, this is what he died for, which is anti the entire story they were telling. If the story is Ryan Gosling's story, it ends with him dying on the step. And you experience that, and you're experiencing this idea of self-sacrifice for this cause greater than yourself. But by taking it outside of that and showing Harrison Ford meeting his daughter, they're obscuring that to actually make self-sacrifice seem more valid than it is.
Yeah.
More noble than it is.
Yeah.
Because if you actually show that tragic ending, then people are going to go, what the fuck? That's it? He died there? I mean, as it ended, people in the theater were like, really? That's where it ends? I mean, my girlfriend was like, that's it? That's where it ends? Like, so even as it ends, it's a pretty shitty ending because, like, they built up this idea that once we find the child, it will change everything. And, you know, the world will be different and replicants will be equal to humans. But then it just ends with the father meeting the daughter, like, okay, whoop-de-fucking-do. So... So even then, they're modulating the shitty ending, right? So the point is he's dying so that replicants and humans can be equal, which, okay, maybe that's a value. But the way they're showing it is they're showing it as the father meeting the daughter, which is even modulating it because it's like saying, okay, we want you to get the idea that he's dying for the future of equality, but we're not actually going to show it, but we don't actually want to show his journey. So they picked this wussy middle ground ending rather than just like – even the aerial shot was a good shot. Like I said, this director has technical ability, but he won't execute on his ideas. So even on the execution of his own ideas level, it fails. I mean, it's like ultimately just because of his technical skill and the acting ability, I give this movie like a 6.5. And that's a very generous 6.5. If you want to watch a 3-hour movie, Nolan and Snyder have much better 3-hour movies to watch. Speaking of which, let's head into our next part of this segment.
Trailer Takedown.
Before we go into the three trailers we're going to hug or tackle today, right before we recorded today, the new Justice League trailer was released. And also, when I Googled it, am I the one who noticed the movie is going to be 2 hours and 50 minutes long?
Nice.
So all of this discussion of like Whedon reshooting like 30% of the movie... Like, are you kidding me right now? 2 hours and 50 minutes and we're going to say he reshot the movie? Like, it's not even possible if that's how long the movie is. So all of these rumors can be put to bed and we can just discuss this trailer. So you guys go first and tell me what you guys thought of the trailer. Daniel?
Yeah. So, I mean, it made me excited to see the movie. At the same time, I thought the trailer was a little weaker than the last trailer. It just felt less emotionally appealing to me and more sort of standard action-y movie. Maybe that's just because they're trying to widen their marketing at the moment. Tends to happen in big budget films, so I don't think that's detrimental, but certainly I thought the last trailer appealed to this sort of sense of heroism more than this trailer did. This trailer felt to me a little more Marvel-y. So
I agree with that, and I'm glad you said that, and that was the question I was going to ask. Besides the opening with the whole Lois thing, and they did the Man of Steel music, and I was like, oh my god, like I felt tears when that was happening. The rest of it was very, very generic and visually uninteresting.
Yeah, after she wakes up in that trailer, the rest of the trailer is a little bit downhill from there.
Yeah, I could have just watched that opening as a teaser and been like, done, I love this movie already. James, what'd you think?
I really liked that beginning, and it kind of, the rest of it just sort of seemed very standard, and I was just like, I was fine with it being standard. I was just really impressed with the beginning. At first I'm like, ah, they're really giving away the whole Superman coming back thing, and then she wakes up, and I'm like, oh shit, like, that is very dark, but in a good way. Like, not really dark, but it's a darkness you can come back from. Because like, I'm sure we'll come back from that yearning and that hoping, and then, you know, it'll I have a feeling it'll pay off. So I liked this fine. It showed us the goods action wise, showed us the characters. The theme of heroism wasn't as, you know, fully expressed, but I think the movie will do that for itself.
Yeah, and there was one kind of line that was sort of worrisome where Aquaman is like the strongest man is the man who stands on his own, and Ben Affleck or Batman Bruce Wayne said that's not the saying at all. So that's a little worrisome if they're going to turn this towards that, but I don't think Snyder would do that. I think they're just going to differentiate between sort of the individualism where you're, or the negative sort of portrayal of individualism where you don't work with anyone versus teamwork.
Or they're, I mean, why would they have Aquaman say that so flatly? Like, he says it, to me, that line is presented as though it's partially true. But then Batman will also, has this point about, and then the rest of the trailer kind of sides with Batman, but I don't know. I don't feel like Aquaman's statement there was stated as though he were wrong about that.
Yeah, there will definitely be a complexity to this that will be missing in most movies. Do you agree, Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and then one final point before we move on to these three trailers here. Do you guys agree that sort of we can put to bed this assessment that Whedon redid this entire movie to make it less Snyder?
I'm just not sure logistically how he could. With this runtime and the budget and the quickness with which everything was turned around between Snyder and Whedon, it would have been some sort of miraculous venture to completely redo the movie.
Right, and this trailer is further evidence of that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
First trailer.
Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan is an Amazon series reboot of the Jack Ryan series, previously starring Tom Cruise, and it now stars John Krasinski of The Office fame. And I have to say, this was a very short teaser, but just based upon the fact that it's John Krasinski in this and in that final scene where it's him, I just, like, I don't see him as an action star. It just doesn't work for me.
Really?
Is
that the only reason?
Me neither.
It's too much Office, and like the type of, like, I don't like, he's, let's put him in a fight versus Channing Tatum. Like, who are we going to pick as our action star here? I mean, even the guy who plays Eggsy in Kingsman, I would rather have him fight for me than this guy. He just looks dopey. Like, I
think he's capable of, I mean, it's hard to bounce back from The Office, but I think he can be very serious. He was in 13 Hours as a SEAL. Or as an ex-SEAL who became like a security operator. I thought his performance was pretty compelling. He can project this sort of like seriousness that isn't exactly Jack Ryan. It's not exactly what I think of when I think of the character Jack Ryan, but maybe this will be just sort of a more serious take on, maybe this is a more weathered, experienced Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
We so see in, like, Hunt for Red October and the Winter Soldier, or whatever that last one was.
So are you hugging based on the guns?
Hug.
No, not based on the guns. I don't know if guns showed up. Were guns in this trailer? Were there guns?
No, but you know guns will be involved.
Guns will be in this. I'm happy about the guns, but I'm also happy about John Krasinski. So,
all right. Well, I'm tackling this. I have no desire to see this at all. Daniel.
James, I hate to say it, but I had the exact same reaction as Justin. Like, when he came up on screen, I was like, oh, he looks really goofy. Maybe he's too spindly or something. But,
I felt like he was too serious to be a Jack Ryan, and then I realized, like, okay, well, Jack Ryan grows up eventually. So,
if you Google John Krasinski and action, like, there are other films where he looks more actiony. And I think I hate to say this, but it's because he has facial hair in some of these other movies, like 13 Hours. And in this trailer, like, he's completely clean shaven. His hair looks a little too modern, you know, like hipstery, and he looks like he's never lifted a weight in his life. I just don't see him as an action person. So, tackle.
Okay.
And before we move on, the question I have is, obviously I'm not a management person, but why do you go from, like, being a successful comedic actor in a sitcom to trying to brand yourself as an action star? Is there more money in that? Is that what this is?
Maybe that's just where his personal passions are as an actor.
If that's your personal passions, why do you spend 8 years on The Office? Just because it's a job? Or 10 years, or however long it is?
Maybe he likes comedy, too.
There are many reasons. It could be more money. It could be he's tired of doing comedy. Could be that he never wanted to do comedy. Just that was the gig. Maybe he never thought The Office was going to last. could be many, many reasons. But
even Rainn Wilson's doing it, though. Yeah. And even Rainn Wilson's trying to brand himself more seriously
now. But, like, there have been people who do this successfully, right? Like, Robin Williams went from being the goofiest stand-up comedian you can imagine to an incredibly serious actor with chops.
Robin Williams had chops?
With what?
Robin Williams had chops?
Acting chops? Totally.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, facial chops. I have to bring this up before we move on, but the quote, "the strongest man in the world is he who stands most alone," that I knew I heard that from somewhere, and that's from An Enemy of the People by Henrik Ibsen. That's the quote. So that is Batman is wrong. That's not the opposite of the quote. That is the quote. Although you don't hear people say that. That's not a saying. That's just, so I don't know. Maybe I'll really like Aquaman.
James is, of course, referring back to, this was not in the Jack Ryan trailer. This was in the Justice League trailer.
Also,
Aquaman didn't have a cameo.
People are capable of doing that. Understanding that.
What'd you say, Daniel?
I was making a different joke. Although all of your jokes are also funny. I'm saying words that have never been spoken, which is maybe I'm going to end up really liking Aquaman. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
The Babysitter. Okay, I'm going to have to cut all this out now. You guys realize I paused because I put the soundbite in there, right?
It's fine. This is all good, pod. Let's keep going. The Babysitter.
All right, The Babysitter is a Netflix horror comedy movie about parents who leave. Ken Marino plays the dad, which I'm hoping he has a bigger role. But the parents leave. They leave their 10-year-old son with them. With the babysitter, she brings a bunch of people over and she starts trying to sacrifice virgins, I think. And it turns into this ridiculous horror comedy fest. Like, one of the lines is that the young kid wakes up and, like, the teenagers are in front of him, and one of them is shirtless and they all have weapons. And he goes, "Why is he shirtless?" And they go, "That's your first question." And it's like, that to me is hilarious. So for me, the over-the-topness of this and my love for horror comedies such as Killer Clowns from Outer Space and Santa's Sleigh starring Bill Goldberg, I am hugging this.
Hug!
I have to say that I do appreciate the originality of this. This reminds me a little bit of, like, Cabin in the Woods. Remember that movie?
Yes, great movie. I love that movie. Yes.
Yeah, This is very much like a Cabin in the Woods meets Scream. I kind of like it. I think, you know, I started off thinking I might light tackle this, but I think I'm going to light hug it instead.
Hug!
Wow! I am slowly influencing you, Daniel.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm.
James?
This is a hard tackle for me.
I don't
like horror. Making horror funny is just gross to me. Like, stabbing people in the head is, it's like, and then making a joke out of it. I don't get it. It's gross.
Gross. Ew. Ew.
Not like literally gross because know, blood James, is squirting, but like
of course
it's
I
just
know, James.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna just detail my what I mean by gross, like in gory detail, because the audience can't handle the abstraction there. Yeah,
or they could just watch the trailer every Thursday on the Midside Facebook page and the midside.com. I put up the trailers that we'll be discussing in the episode, so you can see them. So that way, James does not have to describe it in detail. Just go there.
Just watch it. Just fucking watch it.
Final trailer.
Wonder Wheel is another Amazon Studio movie. This time it's written and directed by Woody Allen, and it stars Kate Winslet and Justin Timberlake. It seems to take place on Coney Island in an earlier time period. I don't know what time period. And I didn't really get an impression of what the conflict or anything was here.
Mob boss wife runs away, but she's a marked woman, and thus she needs help hiding. That was basically the only... I mean, but then something happens, and I don't know what that something is, but...
Is Kate Winslet the mob boss wife?
No, the woman who comes to visit her.
Oh, okay.
You didn't get that?
But then Kate Winslet and Justin Timberlake fall in love, right? Presumably?
I don't know what Justin Timberlake's role in any of this is. He's a lifeguard who, at the beginning, narrates a thing and then disappears for the entire trailer. So, poorly constructed marketing for this film. Anyway, finish your analysis. Sorry.
I don't really have an analysis. My question is, did anyone ever get on the Woody Allen hype train among us? Because I never did. I've never liked any of his movies. Like, I saw some of them that people were like, these are really good, you need to watch them. And then I watched them, and I just didn't like them. So I'm never going to watch this. And especially with Amazon Studios' track record right now of just completely naturalistic crap for movies. Like, I have no desire to see this. This is a tackle for me.
Tackle.
The thing you should watch Woody Allen for is not so much story.
wait, a movie? Character. I don't watch a movie for story?
Or plot, or character. What you should watch it for... is it is a masterclass in directing. He's a phenomenal director, but not a good writer or storyteller. I hope the difference is clear. I mean, it probably is to you. Like, the way he sets up scenes visually, the way he sets up entrances, exits, interaction, is all masterful. And, like, the movie Midnight in Paris is also excellent at that, but watching it as an entertaining story feels like a slog. And I suspect that's what this is going to be like as well.
Yeah,
it's
this
like
very
a bad,
much...
in terms of writing, it's like a bad Aaron Sorkin.
Okay. But directing-wise, it did look like a visual play almost. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. All of his movies just look gorgeous. His modern movies, I should say. His older movies do not.
I will say this. I liked the colorization of this. I did very much. It just looked like it would be boring. Like, I would be watching and go, oh, you know. I mean, in Blade Runner, I liked the way the guy played with the Blade Runner 2049. I liked the way the director played with the atmosphere and what he did with it as well. And then I'm going to make one more comparison, and I'll throw it to James. I will say this. I watched 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. Horrible, horrific show philosophically, psychologically. But if you want a masterclass in how to do visual transitions, that show nails it 100%. So I get what you're saying.
So I will light tackle this.
Tackle.
But if it was on, I might watch a bit. But I'm not going to enjoy it. I know that. So,
James,
if this were just on, I would turn the TV off so I could just sit in silence. I just make sure I can just sit there, enjoy my room. All of its amenities, have a glass of whiskey, and just the sound of my own voice. That's it. That's what's preferable to this. This is dumb. I don't get it. No firearms, no interest. Goodbye. Tackle.
All right. Well, you know what else makes us want to sit in silence and not hear them? All the headlines that come out nowadays. Let's make fun of them in another round of Woker Joke.
Yes.
It's time for America's favorite new game, Woke or Joke. The game where you, the listeners and the hosts here, have to decide if these are actual headlines or if they are satire. The way this works is I will read three different headlines, and Justin and James, you will decide if one of them is a joke or if none of them are a joke. So, we have three exciting rounds for you, and the winner will be crowned Social Justice Sniffer Outer of the Week. So,
and what was the rule we created that if you create a headline and you send it to Daniel and it fools the participants in the game, that you get a prize?
That's yes? right.
But being Midsiders out there.
None of our Midsiders have done that so far.
Well, come on, Midsiders. I will say this. Your prize will, in fact, be one of the t-shirts on the midside.com/store. Oh. So if you want a t-shirt on the midside.com/store, that is a $20 value coming out of my pocket, or really the Patreon funders' pockets. But so if you want a t-shirt, submit a headline, and if you fool the people playing in the game, you will get that t-shirt sent to you for free, the t-shirt of your choice. So you could get False Dichotomy Bro, you could get Hail Snyder, or you could just get the classic logo.
That's right, the classic logo. It's classic.
Also, if Daniel fools any of us, if he fools all of us, he gets a point that round. So Daniel could win.
I could win. And I have won. I won last time. So, gentlemen, are you ready to play Woke or Joke?
Let's do it up.
I guess.
All right. Round one, black stuff. Headline number one. The reporter Cam Newton insulted apologizes for her racist tweets. One more time.
What?
The reporter Cam Newton insulted apologizes for her racist tweets. Headline number two. I hate my mixed race baby because it's still half white. One more time. I hate my mixed race baby because it's still half white. And headline number three. Colin Kaepernick's jersey will hang in the same museum as Starry Night. Headline number three, Colin Kaepernick's jersey will hang in the same museum as Starry Night. Justin, woke or joke?
Okay, so I'm having a really hard time with this because I was hearing the first two. I was like, okay, those are definitely woke. But then the third one sounds woke as well. So it's like, do I trust my instincts and say the third one's a joke because I know the first two are true? Do I go against my instincts and say the second one is a joke? Or do I say they're all true? So that's kind of where I'm at. So I want to say the first one, it's definitely true because the delicious irony that they attack everyone. Like, of course that woman tweeted something racist at some point. Is that woman a white woman as well, that reporter? No, she's Hispanic. Right? Rodriguez?
Probably a white Hispanic.
I cannot give you white any Hispanic context.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Daniel can't help. Oh, okay. Well,
I take the integrity of this game very seriously.
That one's definitely true. I feel like the second one's true because someone would write that, but at the same time, it would also be brilliant satire. And then the third one, like, really? Really, we're going to hang the jersey there? Like, do I really think people are smart enough to do satire like number two? Or do I really think people are, they would be dumb enough satire for number three? I'm just going to have to say, because I don't want number three to be true, that, and I don't think people are smart enough to write the good satire of number two. I don't have that much faith in humanity. I'm going to have to say three is the joke, because there's no way that can possibly be true.
All right. James, woke or joke?
Well, apparently I have a lot more faith in humanity and a lot different priorities than you, because Kaepernick being hung next to Starry Night doesn't sound that bad to me. whereas hating your own child because of their race sounds very fucking bad. And I also think that that is something someone would come up with for satire.
I think so, that's just because my parents hate me for things like, and I'm the same race as them. So it's like hating someone for their race, like, seems within the realm of possibility for parents to me. So,
all right, that may be a factor, but I think number two is way too fucked up to be real and way too funny to not be a joke. So I think number two, the mixed race baby, is the joke.
You could get a point for this round.
Yeah.
Gentlemen. James does get a point for this round. Congratulations, James. You have sniffed out the satire article. Yes. Although it is a very good satire article, I might point out.
Is that Babylon Bee again?
No, it's The Hard Times, which is becoming my new favorite satire site.
Yeah, good for The Hard Times. I will tip my hat to them. You know what? I think we may lose this game. We can't do it anymore because I may have to read that site. That's really good satire.
It is very good satire. You would like it, Justin, because it's a lot of punk and pop punk satire.
Yeah, that shows up in my Instagram feed sometimes. You're lucky I don't read Instagram much.
Yeah. Straight edge baby born with 3X chromosomes.
Yeah, see? Oh, that's me. How did they find my birth records?
Yeah, thought that was funny. So, okay, round two. Moving on, James with 1 point, Justin and I with 0. Round two, gender stuff. Here we go. Headline number one. How queer men of color deal with being fetishized. One more time. How queer men of color deal with being fetishized. Headline number two. State of California to make all prisons gender neutral. One more time. State of California to make all prisons gender neutral. And headline number three. The historical importance of anonymous gay sex. One more time. The historical importance of anonymous gay sex.
Can I just laugh at that for a second? That's a funny fucking headline.
James, woke or joke?
This one feels pretty easy to me. Like, the first one is exactly the sort of intellectual masturbation that the left does, where, yeah, what's that first headline? Queer men of color get fetishized, or the fetishization of queer men of color. Like, oh, is this a problem in our society? Like, this is exactly the sort of just like weird ass shit like liberals put out there to make people feel like they're fucking normal and healthy when it's you're a lunatic, you're crazy. Like, and they're just trying to make you feel normal by having like a discussion about it. Like,
James, is the fetishization of them when you turn them into feta cheese?
It could be, yeah. Why are so many queer men of color getting turned into Greek cheese? So that's a woke. The second one, I think, is a joke because that is the consequences of making prisons gender neutral would be so extremely horrendous. I can't imagine anyone even suggesting that. That's beyond the pale. It's like hating your own child for their whiteness. So I think that's just a joke. That sounds like The Hard Times again, maybe even the same author. Like, that's what it sounds like to me. And then the historical importance of anonymous gay sex, that sounds like something someone would write about, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, it was super important. Like, I wonder, you know, maybe Alexander the Great had anonymous gay sex. You know, that's what they're going to write about. So second one's the joke again.
All right. Justin, woke or joke?
I agree with everything he said. I think the second one is the joke. I will just add with the first one that is most definitely true. As someone who is dating an Asian woman and prefers Asian women, which sounds super racist, but whatever, that is something that is said, that, you know, white guys fetishize Asian women. So they would definitely apply that same logic to the gay community if gay men preferred to, you know, sleep with Asian gay men or black gay men or Hispanic gay men or something like that. So gay, that's men. Most definitely true.
A queer man, Justin. It's not
whatever. Whatever. I mean, whatever. I don't care.
I don't even know what... I thought queer just was a like a weird derogatory term for gay. Now I guess it's like a... Whatever. Fuck it.
It originally was a weird derogatory term for gay, and now they've turned it around to mean anyone who is not conventional or mainstream sexually.
Because it used to just mean weird.
Right.
Like, queer meant strange.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Gentlemen, you have both won this round, as yes, State of California make all prisons gender neutral is the joke, and it is from the Babylon Bee.
Oh.
Danny, you thought you were smart. You were going to put the two jokes in a row in slot two and fool us.
Yes. Yes. I try. I try to outmaneuver you psychologically. But sometimes you're just two whippersnappers who are too smart for me. So, after two rounds, James has 2 points. Justin has one. Justin, it's your last chance to tie it up. In round three of Woke or Joke, feminism stuff.
I just hope the refs don't call hands to the face on me.
Always. Okay. Round three, Woke or Joke. Headline number one. This BDSM carpenter builds furniture for spanking and flogging. This BDSM carpenter builds furniture for spanking and flogging. Headline number two. All-female Lord of the Rings script remake still fails Bechdel test. Headline number two. All-female Lord of the Ring... did I say Lord of the Rings the first time?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, is that wrong?
Yes, sorry. Let me just start over with the headline. I put in rings because the words Lord of automatically make me think, okay.
Oh,
all-female Lord of the Flies remake script still fails.
Wow, that's even worse.
That is severely less funny.
It is less funny.
One more time, though. All-female Lord of the Flies remake script still fails Bechdel test. And headline number three, this feminist ex-Mormon is bringing floral vagina paintings to Utah. One more time. This feminist ex-Mormon is bringing floral vagina paintings to Utah. Justin, woke or joke?
Okay, you are trying to outmaneuver us really hard this episode. You are trying really, really hard. And you did something that you thought we wouldn't get. And number two is clearly the joke. All right, number one and number three, they both sound like you got them from Vice. That sounds like something Vice would cover. I'm surprised I have not seen them on the Vice Snapchat channel yet. I would expect to see them next week. That sounds exactly like things they would cover. And there's no way number two is not satire. Because that's hilarious. Like, Lord of the Flies as an all-gender remake would not work. It's just, it's not possible. And also, making fun of them by saying that a movie that is supposed to be all female still fails the Bechdel test makes fun of the way people apply that to just critique every movie. So that number two has to be satire.
Oh yeah. Cause how could you fail the Bechdel test if every single character is a woman? Then it literally then becomes impossible to fail the Bechdel test.
Right. So they're making fun of it as an unreasonable standard used to critique every movie. Just like when people go, oh, she's a Mary Sue, therefore it's not a feminist movie. Like they did to The Force Awakens.
Oh, that's so funny to think about an all-female version of Lord of the Rings. Because Lord of the Rings is already almost like Lord of the Flies, where it's all men. It's all males. You're like three characters away from it being all males. So, I don't know.
James, woke or joke?
I feel like we've really broken up the structure of this. But yeah, I'm going for number two again. That's the other two just sound like just things I just see when I accidentally open the internet and like news assaults my face.
Well, so. Way to take the climax out of this. I mean, there's no tension anymore. You've already won. Congratulations, James. You have won this round of woke or joke.
I don't know. Let's see.
Congratulations, Daniel. James. You've won this round of poker show.
Oh, yeah, because we had to both. Yeah.
With a clean sweep, you have won Walker Joe. Congratulations. Yes.
I think this is the first time I've done a clean sweep, so I'm pretty proud of myself.
It's very
good. Indeed.
You guys are awesome.
I outwiled the
tiebreaker was one that would have been very clearly very clear to anyone, but I liked it because it was so good, which is American Heart Association sued for discrimination against trans fat.
That's clearly a joke.
It is, but I loved it. I loved the headline.
That's a very Mitch Hedberg joke.
It's Babylon Bee, by the way, and the all-female Lord of the Flies is the Hard Times. So,
I will
Justin,
not be reading that.
Stories were both from Vice.
I read the Vice Snapchat channel all the time. I know Vice content when I see it. Okay,
I'm glad we have this sort of like meta level of the game where not only are we trying to guess whether it's woke or joke, but actually trying to guess like where it came from and who wrote it. I'm still a little disappointed that I wasn't able to guess that what was it?
California.
It sounded like the same, like, I'm imagining someone who's kind of like Nathan For You, like, writing these social justice headlines and, like, being like, oh, yeah, of course we need gender-neutral prisons. I imagined it being the same dude in the same website.
Yes. So thanks, listeners, for playing Woke or Joke. Thanks to the hosts. And until next time, stay woke, or not.
All right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that because I'm half white, my half privilege allows me to get away with anything and not be hated for it. Yeah.
James?
I learned so many things this week. I'm always bad at this part. This is hard, guys. I learned how hard it is to... No, I learned how much good satire there is out there. Like, this Hard Times. And only now I don't get to read it because I want to participate in Woke or Joke. So I'm very torn. That's what I learned.
That's right. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that James is Rip Torn. I didn't know that.
What does that mean?
That's the name of an actor, which is a cheap joke. No, I just learned that we're very smart, and people should trust us more with this whole Justice League Zack Snyder thing. Like, just more evidence. I love when more evidence comes out that's like, hey, you know, what you guys have been saying is true in reality. Fuck off, everyone. Welcome to the Midside.
That's right. If you enjoy fucking off, then why don't you visit us at themidside.com/podcast, where you can listen to all the previous episodes of The Midside, as well as Belichick Your Premises, as well as the entirety of the Snyder series, and in fact, the first episode of Nolan Notes. You can check all those out there at themidside.com/podcast. While you're there, just click over to the store section, themidside.com/store, where you can pick up a t-shirt with the classic logo. So classic.
Classic.
Classic logo. And then while you're there, you can visit themidside.com/Patreon and support us financially. Patreon's a platform where you can give us money every time we produce a piece of content that helps us with hosting, it helps us with advertising, it helps us keep the lights on. I'm a fan of lights. Absolutely. If you can't do that, that's fine. We know it's tough. Times are tough. We love money. But if you don't have any, you can do a couple different things. One, you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, where you can get this podcast delivered to you automatically every week. Or you can write us a 5-star review while you're on iTunes. 5 stars, even if you hate us, 5 stars. And then if you can't do any of those things because you have no fingers, that's fine. Tell a friend about the show. Tell a friend, because that's the number one way that this show grows. It's the number one way that we get new listeners, the number one way we take over the world. You telling your friends. So yeah, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend, and until next time, you are much loved by us.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emlesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.